of Cookfield Baptist Church. Before
can
I was in.
Get one of those mugs. Is that not better?
Sure, it's fine. Yep. Wreck the place. Before I was in Cookfield, I was an assistant pastor in Aylesbury in Buckinghamshire, and I turned up. Virtually my first week there, I was told by my boss, Gary Benfold, another Yorkshireman, Roger's coming in 6 months' time. We've got a mission, and you're organising it. So my first job was to read the mission manual and organise it. And so worked with Roger in a few missions since then. And he's got many valuable things to help us as we think through mission, both in terms of this specific one and more generally. But first question, Roger, is we talk about mission. What's a mission?
It's a good question, because they've become a little bit outmoded, and there's a sort of tendency these days that said, oh, missions just don't work anymore. But really, the way I see a church or interchurch mission is that the church is concentrating over a period of time, and that might be 3, 4, 5 days, it might be a week, it might be a fortnight, but it's concentrating on proclaiming the gospel to unconverted people, to non-Christians who are listening. Most of our ministry is within the buildings. A cynic phoned me up a little while ago and said, oh, our church is having its centenary. I said, oh, wow, right, okay. He said, yeah, celebrating keeping the gospel within these four walls for 100 years. But a mission is really thinking, right, how can we work not so much to teach and edify ourselves, which is very important, but get the gospel out. And normally it'd be done in several different ways, but the focus is very much on explaining the gospel to unconverted people over a period of time.
Okay. Can I just chip in with a question about timing, Roger? Mm. You said a mission might be 3, 4, 5 days, it might be longer.
Yes.
What do you think is best in terms of the duration and also the frequency of events within a mission? I know we did a week in our church, so there's something happening every day.
Yes.
And it was quite hard for people to have someone to bring to something every day of the week. What's your thought of that?
Again, it's a good question. When I first began, missions were frequently 2 or 3 weeks long. And then they were trimmed, they were just 2 weeks. Then they went down to a week. Now, very often, it's 4 or 5 days. But I really think you need 8 days. You need a real concentrated effort at explaining the gospel so that people, I'd like to talk more about this and explain how, but so that we as Christians have lots of opportunities to try and get unconverted people along. My experience is those who are converted normally are hearing the gospel at least 3 times. So I try to encourage people, bring your unconverted friends early. Hopefully they'll find the evening interesting or the day or whatever, then come back. And it's as they're hearing, then the Holy Spirit takes the word, slowly applies it to their hearts. But also, it's so alien now, isn't it, the gospel to people. They haven't got a clue. I was tickled a little while ago. I saw something on television. I don't know which quiz program it was. It wasn't The Weakest Link, but it certainly wasn't University Challenge either. It was somewhere in between. And there was a lady answering for so many thousand pounds. And the question was, in the Bible, chapter 1, it tells about how God made the world. On which day did he make the first man and first woman? And this woman thought for a while and said, Tuesday. And said, no. So she thought again, oh, Sunday. No. She hadn't got a clue. And it just tickled me. I wouldn't have thought they'd know, you know, but no. They haven't got a clue, and therefore they need to be hearing. But if you go too long, as you rightly say, I think the Christians find it hard work then. And I really want as many Christians to be there night by night and as often as possible bringing unconverted people. So I think 8 days is about right.
And would you have something every day?
I would, personally, yes. Yeah.
And you say night by night, so...
No, there should be daytime events, but I think the night by night... It's interesting. There's been a bit of a change, probably over the last 30 years. Whereas before, we sort of wanted to give a broad sweep and have something that we could invite everybody, you know, teenagers, young married, old couple, everybody together. Actually, there's been a bit of a change, so that very often it's the thing that's targeted very narrowly that seems to work. So a lawyer's lunch, a diabetic's coffee afternoon. I spoke at one of those, and they had 15 non-Christian diabetics to come to that.
But no donuts.
Sorry?
But no donuts.
but no donors, no. But it was very, very, you know, targeted. I think the most extreme example of this is I spoke for a lady who had an allotment in an area where there were allotments, and she wanted to reach all the people on the allotments. So I spoke for, you know, at an event that, for what do you call people who have a lot? Are they tax collectors? Anyway, but it was absolutely pouring down. So there was virtually no idea. So this lady, two non-Christians, and me, all huddled together in a little hut. But it's targeting very narrowly, you know, a car, second-hand car salesman. I've spoken to him, for people in the garage, etc. And Rico Tice had, you know, he had a Skelextric evening, didn't he, to reach people with the who love Skelextrics. And he told our church that he had a wine tasting evening. Our church nearly died, the old teetotalers. But anyway, but you know, this is what it's thinking. Who can we reach? So I think the daytime, ideally, will be targeting specific groups, but the evening, let's still try and get everybody along.
Okay. So talk us through both a kind of daytime, typical daytime event. What might that look like in terms of what would you build into it? And then talk us through an evening one.
Again, my feelings changed a little bit, and it depends how big a team. Suppose it was just me. Here, I would say, right, let's use the daytime very strategically. In olden days, I did a lot of schools work. You do a school assembly, you do 8 lessons, you do a children's club after that, then you do the main meeting, and you were dead on the platform, and you'd pray, God, please just give me resurrection power to get through this. And then I began to think, I'm doing all this schools work, explaining the gospel to class after class after class. But actually, we never see these teenagers coming along, and it bothered me. And I thought, now there are people who are doing schools work more effectively by going regularly. How then can I use my daytime? And I really came to this conclusion, who is there that we could reach on their territory who may well then come in the evening? So I started sort of pushing for this sort of thing, the second-hand car sales. I'll give you an example, very, very unique. The chap who owns Spa in South Wales and all along the South is a Christian man in Clantrisant, in near Swansea, on two occasions I've done missions in his churches. Both times he's invited the directors of Spa to a lunch in the director's boardroom, and he's had really good food, and he both times he said, look, you know, this is an equal opportunities company, etc., but you also know I'm a Christian and I've invited you because he said, I'm not very good at explaining the gospel. I thought, you fibber. But anyway, but I've got this chap here. And he's asked me to speak for 10, 15 minutes. And then we've given them all a book. And that's very, very targeted. But nevertheless, very useful, isn't it? To say, right, let's do it. Or I'll give you another example. In Stranraer in Scotland, I did a mission there recently. There are two couples, so that's 4 people, who are all GPs. And they're all in one surgery. It's a big surgery for Stranraer. So they put on an event for all the staff of their surgery. That's receptionists, you know, who are the people who take blood? Vampires, nurses, as well as the other doctors. All these people. And they actually got a medical, pharmaceutical company to sponsor it. So we're all given free rulers and pens and things like that as well. And gave a really good after work meal for them. And again, I spoke for 10, 15 minutes. Now, you will all know people who nobody else knows, but you could perhaps reach. Or I've spoken at a couple of the same church, but there's an artist group, and I've spoken at this particular artist group. But you'll know people whom you can reach, you've got contact with, and it may be possible that we could put something nice on. But more generally, it might just be a coffee morning or coffee afternoon, where a few Christians, not just ladies, because there are men who like coffee as well, maybe coming to your home to put on something like that. And we're doing this. We've also got Roger Carswell, who's going to speak. You know, we've got a special week of activities at our church and other churches. He's going to speak for a little while. Or I've done these Colour Me Beautiful things where the ladies get together and you know, they teach them how to use shark repellent correctly and this sort of thing. And then I speak afterwards. Well, they want an example of real beauty, so they say it's over to Roger. And this sort of thing. So there are lots of things you can do. Actually, I find as well, just a coffee morning in a church. Supposing this church was set out with round coffee tables, and you invite people, they've got coffee and sandwiches, donuts if you want, and maybe a soloist and me speak, they can go very, very well, maybe on a Tuesday and Thursday. So there are lots of things you can do.
And again, picking up on that, obviously one of the beauties of churches working together is that if churches talk together about, they might only have one artist in their church, but in they may have been in churches and know others who are into art and other things, so that those kind of really narrow focus can work better where churches are working together,
yeah,
because
exactly.
There's more shared resource and interest in that.
There's the evening to talk about.
Yeah. Can I just ask about the content of those sort of daytime events? If you're getting a bunch of people who gardeners together, do you treat that as a sort of pre-evangelism event where you talk about gardening and mention the gospel at the end, or do you make it sort of all gospel?
I would try and think of some gardening illustration. I don't know what I did there, I can't remember, but Jeffrey Smith, who used to be on Gardener's Question Time, just died a week or two ago. His wife's a Christian. I've spoken in their home on a few occasions. And I'd probably take a story from Jeffrey Smith, who's quite a character, maybe start with that. But I would in every event, I would feel an obligation, really, to explain the gospel. But I would do it very gently and try and take questions, etc. But even in my evening presentations, I try to be gentle. I've got to be, I passionately want to get across, but I don't want to come across as a tub thumper. And therefore, I'm trying to winsomely introduce them to the Lord Jesus Christ. That's very much my style. But I'd always explain the gospel. But it may be very short as well. It might just be 10, 12, 15 minutes.
Well, let's come on then, just to explore the evening. I know you've done a lot of thinking about this, and your thinking has changed over the years.
Yeah.
Talk us through that.
By the way, there are other things that can be done, just to say, during the daytime. It's not just me, obviously. These sort of coffee mornings, there are loads of others who could take them. We've got great open-air preacher here. Some of you are very good at door-to-door work. I'm not very good at door-to-door work. I'm scared of dogs, and it doesn't help. But there are loads of things that can be done, again, but with the same ethos of lovingly seeking to present Christ to them. Yeah, David, you're right. I've given a lot of thought to this, because I passionately believe that it is the straightforward explanation of the gospel that God honours and uses to bring people to Christ. And I've done loads of things like question nights, where you have a quiz night, tabletop quizzes, etc. And then at the end, you give them 10 minutes before the final score's presented to explain the gospel. I'm not against that. I'm all for that sort of thing. But I don't really believe that sort of thing should be happening in a mission week. I see a mission week as the climax of a year or whatever of events like that. We've made our friends, we've gently introduced them to the things of Christ, etc. Now we're coming to a week of presenting the gospel. But the problem with that is, how do you get along unconverted people to hear a straightforward proclamation of the gospel? Because frankly, they very often don't want to know. And it's a long thought process, but this is where I'm at the moment, and I'm absolutely convinced this works. Now, there's an article about this in last month, or the March edition of Evangelicals Now. And I've also got a paper about it, just a sheet of paper. And so if you'd like to pick one up, just pick it up at the end. I'll put them out. I've come up with this idea. We've come to this conclusion through lots of people inputting. And an evening, you don't need to go with the titles. I'm just going to demonstrate. We might call the whole week Real Lives. Now, that ties in with that book, Real Lives, which has got a load of testimonies. So, Passion for Life, Real Lives, for example. Then, night by night, we have a series of events, each with their own title. Now, I'm going to give an example, but this is just an example. The title for that event is not, Why Does God Allow Suffering? They work in universities, but for some reason, that sort of title doesn't seem to work as well in church. But what do people our sort of age, we're not university age, most of us, what interests us? Well, let's be honest, it's things like Jade Goody, or it's celebrities, it's personalities, it's people. Why do people buy OK magazine and Hello and Rugby magazine and Cricket World, etc.? They're interested in people. So we put on an evening where there is somebody being introduced and interviewed. Now, I don't do it stand-up style like that. It's Parkinson, seated, you know, informal. And that person being interviewed, maybe for 25 minutes, may even be for 30, might be a little bit less, but no more than 30, we interview somebody. Now, the example I'm going to give is the man I've interviewed more than any other on these, I think 43 times now. His name is John Mosey. Nobody's heard of John Mosey. But the evening will be called Real Lives, Lockerbie Father Grapples with Tragedy. John Mosey's daughter was blown up in Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie. Now, Lockerbie is one of those stories that just hasn't died, isn't it? It's still around, and maybe it is becoming a little passé now, but he tells, we sit down and interview him, he tells very movingly the story of how he became a Christian, and then his daughter, why she was going to America, what happened, how he took her to Heathrow, etc., how they heard the news, the results, the ITV news coming around the next day wanting to interview, then the political intrigue, who is responsible for this, etc. How has he been able to forgive and talk with Tony Blair and royalty about these issues? It's fascinating. And I think there may have been one exception now, but other than that, every time I've interviewed him, there's been somebody in the audience congregation who's lost a child in tragic circumstances, which says to me there are a lot of people like this, okay? And so the evening will go, so that's it, Lockerbie Father Grapples with Tragedy. You invite somebody to come along. Now, we can do this then, David, in two ways. Supposing this was the meeting place, okay, because that's easy to imagine. We could do it so that John and I are here on chairs and, you know, everything's done from the front. But if it's a big crowd, you may well have to do that. But this is a big building. You might just turn it on its side and have coffee tables scattered all around and people around coffee tables. You could get a lot of people in like that. And we're working from there. Maybe up here we've got sort of jazz band. You know, I don't mean classic, you know, strictly defined jazz, but sort of classical, sort of informal jazz. So they come in, maybe it's a quarter to 8 o'clock start. They come in, they sit around the table. Jazz band is playing in the background. Got a nice sort of front piece over there. And they sit around the tables. There's coffee, tea or cold drinks, nibbles, etc. And they chat. You chat with your friends, whoever's come, etc. At about 8 o'clock, I would say we have some musical item. Not that we're asking anybody to do anything. We're not asking them to sing, but it might be a soloist, it might be a duet, it might be a band, it might be a jazz. I mean, who knows what? Some musical item that lasts no more than 7 or 8 minutes. Then I'm welcomed by whoever, you know, and Roger, I think you're going to interview John Mosey. I interviewed him for 25 minutes. Bit more music, and then I speak for 25 minutes. Now, in John Mosey's interview, he's actually got film footage of the news that night, and that's quite powerful after a few minutes, so we show that as well. So, actually, all we're doing is music, interview. Music, message. We're not asking the non-Christian to do anything, except have something presented to them. But they're actually getting a lot presented to them, because they're getting a 25-minute testimony, say, and a 25-minute message. Now, my justification for that is the Apostle Paul, at least three times, in great detail, in the book of Acts, he gives us his testimony, as well as preaching. So God obviously uses testimonies, and, you know, people nowadays, do they want to come and sing a hymn? But do they just want a tag-on as well? The tag-on has its place, but I think, no, a full presentation. Then I invite people, if anybody's interested, you know, I have a pack of booklets that explain how to become a Christian and follow on, etc. Can I have a chat with me? Or it might be, there's a big crowd, I'll say, look, David, who introduced me, and I will have these packs. John will be around to talk, etc. And I find those work extremely well. My experience is that actually the numbers build up over the week, and Christians see, I can take along my unconverted friend without any embarrassment. We're not asking them to do things that actually Christians do, but we're just asking them to listen to something that's very intriguing. Now, there are some amazing stories like this, and very interesting. You can have a sports person, you can have a local politician. I don't know what it is, but you do the mix of people who've suffered, people who've got an intriguing story, gangster who's converted, terrorist who's converted, etc. And it's very, very thrilling, and you sort of look and think, right, I could invite my friend to here, I don't know, Fiona Castle next week I've got, and John Mosey, and a UVF terrorist, and I'm trying to think who else, a local barrister, etc.
Okay, well, two questions from that. One, and Roger, given that we're all thinking about planning a mission the same week in 2010. And you're not going to be available for every evening in every event. In fact, not many over the whole period, given that we'll only have you for a short while in this area. And given that there's only a, you know, you can think of all the famous Christians and so on.
They need to be famous.
Yeah, so that's the question. So, so help us to think imaginatively in terms of what a local church, who they might be able to think of. What kind of other ideas have you seen work locally other than the well-known ones?
Yeah, well, they needn't be well-known ones, but they have to have a good story. And actually, I don't know you, unfortunately, but I guarantee on the first two rows here, I'm just picking out random, there will be somebody who's got a remarkable story when they tell it. And it's amazing how many remarkable stories there are. And you start to, I've got a long list of these people now, but actually it's built up by just saying to locals, who do you know? And, for example, I'm going, it's not next week, it's the week after next, to St. Andrew's Bevington on the Wirral. That is the big evangelical Anglican. They're doing this week's mission because last year I did one at Holy Trinity's Spittle on the Wirral, which is their daughter church, and it was a very blessed mission. They saw through and said, why don't we do the same? But who did they have? Well, the final night, they had a lady who'd been a Christian just 2 years, and her husband was not a Christian. He was a barrister. And Christmas Eve, he'd been doing some things on the Christmas tree, and he just said, I'm going around to see a friend of mine. I'll be back shortly. I just want him to have this CD. And he went round in his Jag, and he'd been drinking a little bit, but not much. But anyway, he crashed and was killed. This led to this lady becoming a Christian. So in the last 2 years, through tragedy, she's been converted. But everybody on the world knows this story about this particular barrister, etc. So when they said she is telling her story, that was a big draw. Or even more dramatically, two Easters ago, I was in Lisbon in Northern Ireland. Big, big place. At the opening night, they had a chap whom I've interviewed several times since. But he'd never given his testimony before. Now, I was speaking in a 700-seater hall. It was packed. They used a 200-seater overflow, and then they had to turn people away. Now, that's Northern Ireland, bigger numbers anyway. But why were there so many on the opening night? Because everybody wanted to hear Andrew Cardy. Why? 25 years ago, his 9-year-old daughter was abducted and murdered. He has never told his story before. As we sat down together, he whispered to me, he said, loads of these people, Roger, helped us look for my daughter, Jenny. And it was just a local story that went big. Now, once you've had a big opening night, the next night they had Professor Norman Nevin from Belfast, Queen's University, professor of genetics, Christian, very cultured sort of man, and, on science and Christianity. For example, 2 weeks' time, we've got Michael Clarkson, professor of veterinary parasitology at Liverpool University. Not a great testimony, brought up in atheism, but converted as a student, but it, on the same sort of line. So there are lots of local people like this, and you will have some. There's no doubt, and they're fascinating.
Absolutely. I think that's key, isn't it, to think local, to think imaginative. Similarly on that, I remember on that particular week that you did all those years ago, two of them, one was I interviewed a man whose wife had died of cancer, and that was very powerful, and then another one was, again, a man in the church who happened to work for MI5. That was just fascinating. So you can just have something.
Absolutely.
That's just, oh, wow. And there are, in all our congregations, people who are interesting.
usually in the congregation.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one other thing, Roger, from that, again, just in terms of your thinking development, I know that years ago you emphasised a lot about food-based evangelism, and now you're kind of moving to this model. Talk us through your thinking as to, again, the advantage of this kind of approach rather than the tack it on the end to a meal, quiz night, wine tasting kind of thing.
You see, the food-based evangelism undoubtedly will bring in more non-Christians than what I've just described. So if you give everybody a slap-up meal, it's tremendous for bringing in the unconverted people. But I gave a lot of thought to, why is it, when there are more non-Christians at these evangelistic events where there's food, I don't really see conversions. But then I go to these more straight proclamation events where there are fewer non-Christians, but they are converted. And I may be wrong in my conclusion, but humanly speaking, obviously the Lord is in control of all of these things, but humanly speaking, I thought it's something to do with the sense of expectation of the non-Christian. So the non-Christian goes to the food-based event and knows they'll have to put up with something at the end. But the non-Christian goes to the proclamation event. They know that the main thing is going to be the message. In fact, there's almost a sense, they may not articulate it to you, but there is a sense, you know, oh, I'm going to hear a sermon, and who knows? And I think it's to do with the sense of expectation. So I think in the year leading up to Passion for Life, for example, do the food-based events, do the quiz nights. If I could go a little bit further, I was talking to the Northern Cornhill Group. It doesn't exist now, but the Northern Cornhill Group about 3-4 years ago, and there were about 80 students there. And I said to them, just think creatively. What could you do? And I want to say this to you, what could you individually do to reach your friends? I threw out the question, left it. It was a few months later, a girl phoned me up and just said, oh, Roger, I just thought I'd like to mention to you, you don't know me, but you know you said about think creatively, what could you... Well, we're doing something at Christ Church Fulwood in Sheffield. It's an Anglican church. It's not as good a venue as this. This is brilliant for events. But anyway, we'll leave that for a moment. And she said, there are a number of us who are just teenagers in Christchurch Fulwood who are musicians. We're putting on an event where we're all going to perform, and we're inviting our friends as well as the locality to come and hear us. But four of us are going to give our testimony before we perform. As it happens, I was free that night, so my wife and I went down, and the church was packed, mostly friends, relatives. I'm sure some had come in from the locality. But wow, they did amazing things. There was a 13-year-old boy playing the piano. I just don't know how they... I wish I'd tried at 13 to play, because I might have been able to play like him. I don't know.
And then again, yes.
But he was just brilliant. He didn't give his testimony. He was young, but he was a brilliant performer. But they had small testimonies. There was no direct message. But they packed it out with young people who were admired, who actually shared something of the gospel. It's just a brilliant event. And it's thinking creatively, who do you know, and how could you reach them? In our home, we've got a long lounge, and actually then the dining room at an angle, so it makes a sort of L-shape if we take off the doors. And many times now, we haven't done it for the last, well, like 15 months, though we perhaps should do it again, but we've invited people to a buffet supper in our home. And we've taken off all the doors downstairs. The most we've ever had is 84 people, so we sort of keep cramming them in. And we do a nice formal invitation card. Roger and Doc Carswell invite, and then we have some dots so we can write a name, to a buffet supper, 7:45 for 8 o'clock, on Saturday, guest speaker, whoever it is. And usually somebody in the secular world who's got an interesting story. And... So that's the 3 months leading up to that. I'm thinking, who am I meeting? Who could I invite? And we've got a few other Christians working to bring along unconverted friends. Now maybe you could do something like that. I don't know what it is, but I guarantee every one of us could be involved like this. Now, I'm not saying be mavericks. Let's do it with, you know, partnership with the church that's praying and helping and da-da-da-da. But it's amazing what we can do once we start to think.
Okay. We're going to open up to questions from the floor in a moment, but just a couple of kind of big questions. How long before the big mission week should a church be getting together a team to be planning it, is one question. And what are the big areas that they need to be thinking, right, in our agenda, we don't start with a blank piece of paper, we've got to look at this, and this. What are those things, and when?
Yeah, I really think you need to start planning now. I'd say a little bit before now, really, but I can't. We don't go back in time. So I think you need to be planning now. I would say get as many people involved as you can in the planning, so they're all sort of owning the mission. So you might have a planning committee, but maybe everybody on that committee is the chairman of a subcommittee, such as for prayer and publicity and program, all the P's, and I don't know what else you might have, but you know, they're responsible for certain things like this. I do think then if a lot of people are involved in praying and planning, they own the mission, that's what I want to say. And what was the second question you asked?
What are the big areas that need to be looked at?
Yeah, well, prayer. How can we mobilise people to pray? You know, you might have, there's one here somewhere, a prayer card. You've seen this sort of thing anyway, so that people can list names of people they're praying for. You might try and get prayer groups, 3-4s together. the publicity. How are you going to do it? How are you going to maximise it? How do we get to the local newspapers? How do we get on local radio, etc.? All these things are a sort of backdrop that just makes it easier to invite people. But generally speaking, people don't come by that sort of invitation. They come when you bring along your friends. But it helps if there's that backdrop, so that when we invite them to something, they're, oh yeah, I know about this, I've seen that, etc. So program, publicity, prayer. I think probably they're the main three things. My experience is some sort of plan too much in advance. No, that's not wrong. Plan too meticulously, that's what I wanted to say. And it becomes a bit like a wedding. A wedding's a great event, but let's face it, we all end up at a wedding exhausted, thinking, well, I hope every petal's pointing in the right direction of the flowers, and, you know, don't we? We feel we've got to get everything covered, but it's a wonderful event as a wedding, but it's also a bit of a pain because we've got it so meticulously planned. But then you don't want to do what the university students do and fly by the seat of your pants at the last minute. I've done two missions now in the last 3 years where the hoodies, with all the publicity on the front and the back of the hoodies, have arrived on the last day after the last mission. And you think, well, what a waste of money, you know. And why is that happening? Because they didn't plan. So you don't want that, but you don't want the other either. So go into it comfortably. It mustn't become a massive burden to you, because that's not what we're all about. But probably one person will carry the can, and it maybe is a bit of a burden for that one individual. But the rest of us, we want to enjoy it and also feel free to be able to invite our unconverted friend.
Well, let's open it up now for any questions to Roger that have come to mind as he's talked, as you think about planning for next year. Yeah.
Yeah, well, they're very good questions, because I've heard that as well. If only I knew how it was going to be, then...
Yeah. Can I just repeat the questions for the sake?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so questions about preparing Christians to share their faith, and about the problem when people get to Mission Week, they say, if I knew it was going to be like this, I would have invited people, but they didn't know till they get there, and the follow-up after the mission. Roger.
Yeah, let's go them through them one by one. The first one then, how do we get them preparing now and sharing the gospel? Really, we need to be involved in the work now. And we don't come out like little rabbits from their burrows a week or so before the mission, make contact with all these non-Christians and burrow away and hide ourselves till the next evangelistic mission. But I fear sometimes we do that. We do need to get involved in the unconverted community, don't we? I was very impressed. Some of you have heard me say this before. Doing a mission years ago now at Powner Baptist Church in Ringwood, and we really got a load of unconverted people along. They had no pastor at that time, and I said to the administrator, a lady called Anne, I said, how have you got so many unconverted people along to these events night by night? And she said, Roger, it's not quite a rule of membership, but more or less is, she said, that we ask everybody who's a member of our church to be involved in something secular as well. So it might be a PTA, it might be a cookery class, it might be a golf club, it might be... But everybody has unconverted friends whom they can invite. And one of the problems we face is that often we don't really have close unconverted friends, do we? And we need to be working and praying towards that. So that's the first thing. Be involved now. Some of these things that I've been talking about for the mission actually could be done now on a regular basis. Second question was very interesting. Just remind everybody.
I think it's a key question, actually. It is that we have the problem. We put on the events we expect people to invite them to, and they don't know what the event is like until the event has happened. So how do we deal with that problem? Should we do dry runs of the events this year already for next year?
It might well be a very good idea to do a dry run or two of this music interview, music message. Yeah, right. Very good idea. But I think we ourselves need to be confident that if we invite our unconverted friend, they're not going to be put off by something that is unnecessary. We know there's an offence to the cross, but we don't want them to be offended by other things, do we? And as much as I can, I assure you, I'll try not to say things that are of unnecessary offence. And I think that assurance, driving home, the people who come are the people who are brought, but I think the dry run probably is a very good idea. And then the follow-up, I'm glad that was mentioned, because I think it's key. I think part of the preparation is training, the old word was counsellors, people who can sit down with somebody who's asking questions and try and answer the questions and maybe lead them to Christ that very night. We need people like that. But I think as well, as soon as the mission's over, if it finishes, say, on Sunday, I don't know when it does finish, but maybe the following Thursday, you go straight into Christianity Explored or Simply Christianity. I've not come across that one yet, but it's that sort of thing, so that you say, right, starting every Tuesday, every Thursday, is a course, whichever one's suitable for you, it's going to be over here or over here. So immediately we go in, and we start advertising that straight away. Yeah.
Can we take another question?
Yep.
Who was next? Yeah.
Yes.
Can
you say something
about the question is about what makes a good venue? Do we go for the hassle and the expense of secular venues like pubs and theatres, or not bother with that?
My own view, well, what makes a good venue, this is good because, sorry, I like pews myself, but they're not conducive for changing things around, etc. This is good, it's spacious, you've got screens, you can make it smaller if you want, it's not too, quote-unquote, religious, it's a bit of an irreligious church, isn't it? I don't know about these words round about, but anyway, and so you can do a lot with it. And I love the alcoves as well, you can actually extend a bit more without... But you don't need to if you don't want to. So I think this is quite good. I think a church that looks very, very religious or isn't able to be adapted for different types of events perhaps isn't so brilliant. And then the second part to your question was, oh dear, my mind's going.
Pubs
and clubs and, theatres. I would, 10 years ago, have argued strongly for doing that. But now I'm not so convinced. The reason is they're expensive. Secondly, I don't think there is as much reticence about coming into a church as we think there is. Now, I think there might be, if you're trying to reach Muslims or Hindus or something like that, they may feel a little bit more reticent, and then you'd have to think differently. But actually, I don't think that, we always give the example, just as you'd find it very difficult to go to a nightclub, say, many people find it difficult to come to church. I don't think that's necessarily true, especially if it's set out differently, and we're not taking them through a pattern that they need to be familiar with, but they don't know anything about. Actually, we're just asking to present something. And I think it's not a bad thing for them to get the idea of coming to church. Anyway,
Just one thing to add on that is, again, what you emphasise is that most people who come to these events are brought.
Yeah.
And therefore, it doesn't matter where it is. If you're going to bring them and offer to knock 10 minutes beforehand to bring them in, that's not going to matter as much.
Okay, another question? Andrew.
Right. Yes, I can. I think a partnership means that the sum of the parts is greater as a whole than the individual parts. I do think you gain by a number of churches being able to work together. The problem is, I don't know what sort of churches are represented here, but the problem can be that you're going along a certain program, a certain line, that actually one church doesn't really feel very comfortable with, or maybe feels unhappy with. And that leads then to them saying, okay, we are involved, but we're not involved. And that isn't good. It's better that they do their own thing than be forced into a mould where they feel as though they're actually being squeezed out of, but nevertheless trying to be included in. And then, so I think, you know, it's great to be able to cooperate together, talk together, pray together, plan together. If you can do that, that's much, much better. And personally, I don't know, and I may be speaking out of turn, I would try and do different things in the local churches during the day and then corporate events in the evening. This sort of time, it was the week before Easter last year, I did a mission that was really sponsored by one particular church in Mould in North Wales, but seven other churches worked together with them, and they all came together in the evening. They actually used the civic hall and their own church. They came to the conclusion it was best in their own church, but then we put on major events in the other churches during the day. I basically did nothing in Mould during the daytime program. That worked very well, but they all owned it, and there was no squabbling over who's going to get this convert, etc.
Time for one last question. So the question is, if we're inviting people in or people offering to come and tell their story, how can we make sure that what they say in terms of the gospel is going to be the true gospel?
It's more pertinent than you might think. My good friend Paul Hinton was interviewing somebody not very long ago, a well-known sort of person because of an incident in their life. And as he went on, he just realised, this woman isn't converted at all. And at that moment, he just got her story and left it. Just didn't delve into spiritual things, but very difficult. But actually, that shouldn't happen, because we are inviting them. We are inviting people we know about. If I've never interviewed them before, what I normally do is spend some time with them beforehand and chat through. If they're wanting to emphasize certain things that I don't think are central to the gospel, I'll say, look, that's fine for you to say that in a different context, but here we're really targeting the unconverted people. So can we just leave that? So I know where I'm going in the interview, though it's spontaneous, but so it doesn't really happen unless there's been some bad planning there.
Thank you, Roger.
Thank you. You'll
be near the bookstall.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes.
So just assume that is your natural habitat.
It is. Yes.
So if people have questions they want to ask you over lunch, then
yeah, please. Know. I'd love to chat.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Well, we're going to hear now from two people that we believe really are converted. Nicholas and Rachel are going to come, and they're just going to tell us their stories. And they're coming up because missions were instrumental in both of them coming to faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. So Nicholas and Rachel, if you'd like to come up and just tell us your stories. Thank you.
Hi everybody, I'm Nicholas Carr and I'm currently a warden at Holy Cross Church in Hove. Over the weekend of 6th to 8th of March 1998, we had a mission weekend at Holy Cross with a group from Oak Hill College working with us. And a couple of that group were staying at our home. My wife had been a regular at Holy Cross for a number of months by then. On Sundays, she did church, I did the gym. I'd become interested in what the church had to say at around the end of 1997. And I began reading the Bible avidly. And I met regularly with our minister at the time, who was also an avid football fan, and like me, albeit a different team, but that's actually another story. But I was trying to understand with the minister what appeared to be happening to my heart and my mind. On a number of occasions we met in a local pub. On the Saturday morning of the mission weekend, I was invited to a men's breakfast by a member of the Holy Cross congregation, where one of the leaders at Oak Hill gave a thought-provoking talk on the need to accept, believe, and come to Jesus. and over dinner on the Saturday nights with members of the mission, we discussed that the talk that morning and what it meant to be a Christian. The whole of that Saturday really challenged me. Having a chance to talk with knowledgeable Christian students at this stage of my exploration what it meant to be a Christian was, I'm sure, an important factor in my conversion. The mission culminated with a Sunday service and a church family lunch to follow. I was attending Sunday services regularly by then, but certainly did not expect what was going to happen next. During the service, while singing "Thank You for the Cross," I said, "I know." I realised that this was the point of my conversion. And a shiver goes through my spine each time we sing that song. As a mature adult coming to faith, I didn't regret that this had not happened earlier. I'd been called, and so it must have been the right time. The very nature of my conversion would not have happened had not others encouraged and supported me. It was their evangelism that led me to God. With a fresh and vibrant faith, I wanted to get involved and so tell others of the good news. Now, there's no magic formula for evangelism, but the experience has helped me to understand that ordinary people getting alongside those who do not yet know Jesus and telling them about him and how you live your life out is a key element. I realised that it was important to recognise and take appropriate opportunities to tell non-Christians the good news. I had to be true to myself and as a Christian, thereby God. I'm constantly having to remind myself that God is in control and to trust in the direction he is leading me, however strange that may seem. And I'm really excited by the prospect of a nationwide mission passion next Easter. And we all need to pray about what opportunities will present themselves during that week. And as we prepare for this event, at events such as today, and in our own congregations over the next year, let us all use our particular God-given gifts effectively to bring the lost home. Thank you.
I realised suddenly this morning that I've got something in common with the Apostle Paul, which was quite encouraging. He said in Corinthians, as we looked at the Bible, I come to you in weakness and fear and with much trembling. And that's what I've got in common with him. When I moved into my new flat in the area, there was a pile of junk mail on the doormat. And I went to the bin with most of it to stick it straight in the bin because I hate junk mail. But there was an invite from the local church amongst the junk mail, and so I just put that to one side. And as part of the church mission, the church members had been going door to door inviting the neighbourhood to a barn dance. I decided to go along to it because I'd been to one as a child and remembered that it was quite good fun. I don't remember there being a gospel message there, but I do remember several people just being really friendly. And I think that's why I decided to go along to the church. I intended to go just once, but again, someone was particularly welcoming, so I decided to go again. And on my third visit, I became a Christian. I didn't really want to, but that's what happened on my third visit. I had a sore throat that week, and I couldn't sing, and I became very conscious of the words that were being sung around me. And Nicholas stole my line here, because I didn't realise a similar thing happened to him. The words that were being sung were, "Thank you for saving me," and suddenly I realised that I couldn't sing that, and I wasn't saved, and that I actually needed to be. I couldn't wait for the service to end, and I just wanted to ask the minister to pray with me and so that I could receive the salvation for myself. The way that that encouraged me gave me a passion for evangelism, for for a while I became a mission junkie. If there was a mission on, I had to be there, whether it was anything to do with my church or not, I'd just turn up. I didn't particularly do anything useful. I just hung around people, and because they were passionate about Christ and sharing their faith, I just really enjoyed spending time with them. I'm especially passionate about door-to-door work, and although it terrifies me, I feel driven to be involved because it played an important part in transforming my life. The amazing thing is God didn't expect the person who put the leaflet through my door to have a fabulously confident gospel conversation with me. He was quite happy to just use their possibly nervous, shaking but willing hands to just deliver the invite through the empty-looking, unlived-in house. Once that was done, he talked to me himself through the words of that song. Again, because of this experience, I'm also very conscious how powerful song lyrics can be as a form of evangelism. I would encourage everyone here to be passionate about mission and to use that passion to inspire and drive you or your congregation to reach out to those who have yet to hear the gospel. Enthusiasm is infectious. Take a moment to reflect on the way God personally drew you to himself. Think about those who are out there who are just waiting to be introduced to Christ. Think about those who think they don't need Christ. I was one of those people. I didn't think I needed him at the time, but he knew I needed his grace and mercy in my life. I'm thankful for the people that took the time to plan that mission, and I'm grateful to those that took the step of faith and courage it requires to take part in door-to-door work. I wouldn't be standing here today if it wasn't for my church's local mission. There are others who out there who need him right now. All we need to do is be willing. God will powerfully do the rest if we take the first step. And just remember, he used a silly thing like a virus in my sore throat so that I would listen to his words. So things can be very simple. He can just use anything that we do, really. If he wants people to come to Christ, he'll get them there through us. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicholas and Rachel. It's great to hear your stories and to hear what happened when Christian people were just willing to invite and share the gospel, and God used that in your lives. And Rachel said she wouldn't have been standing here a Christian today if the church hadn't been behind that mission. So there's a great spur to us to get behind a passion for life. We've heard lots of ideas from Roger. There are lots more ideas in this book, Ideas for Mission. So do make sure that someone from your church buys one of these. There's enough for each of the churches represented here today, I think. And also there's the Passion for Life training DVD to help people become equipped to share the gospel with their friends and to invite people. So we've had a very useful second session, I think, which will feed into our third session, when we'll have the opportunity to get into groups and discuss together, share more ideas and plan together. But now Mark's going to come and tell us how we get some lunch. Thanks, Mark.